Welcome to the Mad Trio Podcast. This week we have the California Pariah and James, the Fat Man Stevens.
Hello.
Ryan Preston is most likely absent from this episode.
Shocker.
I guess he had something better to do, like maybe watch all those movies he didn't watch for Real Flix Reviews.
Now that I really doubt.
We would be busy for a while. So I've been looking for a new game just because I'm looking for something to help me de-stress at the end of the day. And I've been playing Skyrim from scratch, no mods, again. Completely refreshed. This time I'm playing a female character, which I've never done before, and I'm playing a Brenton, which I've never done before. Normally I play Khajiit.
I've always played Khajiit.
Brenton is it's like the battle mage character. I mean, it basically strong in magic, and it's not an elf, which is another one I've played before. But you know what? It was a kind of crazy to me is the fact that it was made in 2011.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that old. That was one of those things that was like, no, it can't be that old.
No, it really is that old.
Yeah, I just blew my mind. Just one second. Do you have anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, I kind of did. Excuse me. So, how would you feel about buying a 1928 Cadillac?
Just buying a 1928 Cadillac? Well, I mean...
Well, I mean, would it make any difference if it was priced at $1 million?
Yes, because
would it make any difference if the vehicle was bulletproof, had quick-release windows for firing upon people, even little gunner holes in the windows?
Was this Al Capone's car?
Yes, it is. It is finally up for sale.
I heard, didn't
3,000 pounds of steel. Of armor plating.
Didn't they use that as the first presidential car for a while?
Oh, I have no idea.
Honestly, I think it would be cool to have a 1928 Cadillac. My only problem is the fact I wouldn't know how to work on it.
It's just only got over 1,000 miles.
I'm kind of hoping Jay Leno buys it.
That's who I was thinking as I was reading the whole thing. I'm like, I could totally see Jay Leno jumping on that.
That would be badass.
And apparently Al Capone showed up to pick it up in person.
That's hilarious.
I mean, how would you feel if Capone comes walking in and has my car? You know?
Honestly, I don't think that would bother me as long as you didn't say anything that pissed him off.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because he's a customer, and maybe he'd be a returning customer. He'd get all his gangster friends some high-end badass limo.
Yeah, but I think that'd be pretty damn cool to have that.
Dude, it would be fun. Hell, I'd love to have an armored car now, man. It's the fact I couldn't afford the gas.
Yeah. I wonder how much gas that vehicle eats through as it's being driven, because I mean 3,000 pounds.
Most
armor plating.
Well, I mean, so what, maybe it's what comparative like weight wise to a modern car? Because most modern cars are like 40, you know, they're like anywhere between 5,000 pounds. Like 2.5.
What do you think?
I bet it gets pretty bad gas mileage even for the day, because most modern cars didn't get an average of 20. So I bought it. I bet it gets like my old truck. I bet it gets 8, anywhere between 6 and 8.
Yeah.
Downhill.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, could you put a newer fuel injected engine in there? I'm sure you could.
Yeah, I think you could. I don't know how much that would cost. I think you'd also be ruining the originality to it. I think a car like that, it would be something you'd want to keep it as original as possible and just, you know, drive it around for fun. Like if you want to do like Jay Leno.
Yeah.
Or loan it permanently to like the, you know, like the, was it Peterson Museum? It's a giant car museum in Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, I think that's the name of it.
Because I could see doing that. It's like, look, I bought this car. I can't afford it. Would you guys mind? Blah, 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 you know, and then it becomes a tax write-off type of thing.
Yeah, true.
I could see doing that. I don't know. I mean, I think that'd be pretty badass, though. I just couldn't imagine buying a car for $1 million. That's so much damn money.
I know that. That is a shit ton of money. That's I mean, but just it being Al Capone's car, I mean, that's a cool thing. I mean, it's not like you're really going to go around and, you know, unload on people. I mean,
I would be tempted.
I would want to have a Tommy gun with a drum mag to go along with it.
Find one that's like an airsoft gun.
I'm sure they have those. There's
I would be tempted to start taking apart, see if I could find any, like, history part. You know, like, start taking some of the interior pieces, see if you could find, you know, an old piece of paper or something. So there's something in, like, the random news news report of the day. I don't know why CNN.com's hating me right now. Three men stole 600 rolls of toilet paper. Three men stole 600 toilet paper rolls in Hong Kong amid fears of the coronavirus shortages. This is one of the top 10 wackiest things. I mean, I totally understand. Police in Hong Kong have arrested two men and are searching for a third after the group stole about 600 toilet paper rolls in a robbery, likely sparked by the coronavirus fear that gripped the city. I just couldn't imagine, like, how do you steal 600 rolls of toilet paper? I mean, that's pretty brass balls, especially in a place that's basically China.
Yeah, and known for sentences I wouldn't want. You know?
Yeah, this is one of the wackier ones. Another one, another one that made some of my lady friends laugh, just because it's another one of the weird things. If I can get this website to go, there was, I guess it's this, Huntsville, I guess Huntsville, Alabama, or Huntsville, wherever this from, has a tax-free day. So everything's like once a month or once in a while, at some point is tax-free. I don't remember exactly. But this politician didn't want to put lady products on there, like tampons and stuff, because they were afraid of them hoarding them. And I was thinking, you know, I don't really see hoarding tampons being a thing, because they're eventually going to get used. So how is it really hoarding? And, you know, my comment was, I can see it now. Hey, Bob, I'll charge you 6 tampons for the honey buns in your lunchbox, because it's the stupidest thing. I don't know how more you ridiculous you can get with that, you know. And so my women friends were thinking it was hilarious. One actually popped off on the article. I said, come on, it's ridiculous. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. How can you be mad at something that's so mental?
We kind of talked about that last week. There's people that are just waiting for basically just things to be offended by.
I guess so. I mean, I can understand from the lady product thing is, and I never thought about this, but this is their argument. Like, there's a tax on all those items, you know? So a lot of the times they call it a pink tax, because it's only, you know, a segment of society actually need these products, you know, and then yada, yada. So, I mean, I understand it. I mean, I don't particularly have an opinion.
And does he do online
shopping?
Yeah. Or,
honestly, I didn't say. So I don't remember it being that specific. It was just about this politician worrying that people were going to buy all these products up because they were tax-free. You know, and then my thought, it was like, okay, if there was a limitation, say like, okay, ladies, instead of buying all of it, all you can buy is, I don't know, half a dozen boxes of tampons. And then my thought was, well, being a guy and not liking limitations like that, I would go in there and buy 6 boxes and donate them just on sheer principle.
Yeah, no joke.
You know, I'd love to see the person's face. Sir, why are you buying 6 boxes of tampons? I know a lot of people that need them, like, you know. Or, oh, I'd use the line I heard, I read somewhere on Reddit years ago. They said a lot of medics keep tampons and pads in their emergency kits because they, you know, they soak up blood, so they're good for emergencies. I'm just like, oh, I know somebody who's going to Afghanistan.
All right.
I don't know. It made me laugh. I still think it's funny. I'm still getting funny conversations a bit on it, because it's such a wacky. People are so fucking weird.
I agree.
Oh, I know a couple of years ago we were talking, how long would it take? We talked about how long would it take to watch Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and all the extended editions. I found this website, and I haven't played with it a lot. It's called bingeclock.com. So Here's the question. How long does it take to watch all the movies in the Lord of the Rings trilogy plus The Hobbit, all extended versions of the movie? Guess. How long would it take?
2 weeks?
In hours. How long would it take in hours?
Oh, in hours.
If you decided, okay, you started like 6 a.m., I'm going to watch all of these at one time. Because this blew my mind.
Let's see, 6 to 18, let's see. There's two Hobbit movies, right?
Three. Because remember, we were bitching, how do you turn a 300-page book into that's 9 hours? True.
So let's see. Well, you kind of gave me that point. So
so you want the answer?
27 hours.
You are actually less. It is 19 hours and 39 minutes.
That's not that bad.
I just blew my head. I was like, 19 hours. And then I realized, that's right. They could have easily taken the three Lord of the Hobbit movies and made it into two movies.
Yeah.
Because the Technicolor Rainbow was pretty bad in that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the one I wanted to bring up to Ryan, but since he's not here, he may call. I got a message from him saying he might show up. We'll see what happens. So this is what I'm calling the precursor to Running Man. But real life. Death row inmates forced to play baseball for their lives. On a hot summer day in baseball mad Rawlins, Wyoming in 1911, a tightly packed crowd watched pitcher Thomas Cameron rear back and hurl a fastball towards home plate. The ball went wild, clipping the opponent's player on the left shoulder before bouncing into the stand, allowing him to take first base. Cameron, who was dying on the mound in more than one ways. A convicted rapist, Cameron was pitching for the Wyoming State Penitentiary All-Stars, a team featuring only the hardest of hardened criminals.
Wow.
Many in the town, from local bar patrons to team captain, George Sabin? Thanks, Google. Google. George Sabin, himself a convicted murderer, to the prison warden himself, had substantial sums wagered on the All-Star to win. The stakes for the convicts were higher than simply the thrill of victory or the agony of defeat. When they were all told meant time off on their sentences. Lose, however, came the consequences, writes Howard Kazajian and Chris Earns in the unbelievable new book, The Death Row All-Stars, a story of baseball corruption and murder. Basically, if they lost, they died. I mean, there's more to it.
Huh.
But it just blew my mind. I mean, granted, this was 1911. This is early, early. I mean, I don't even think radio was around in 1911. Not that I can remember.
No, I can't remember.
Do you imagine that? That basically you got to keep winning or, you know, time off or die. I mean, it's exactly like the movie Running Man.
Yeah. Wow. All right. That's an interesting thing. And on that, did you hear that the Boy Scouts of America is filing for bankruptcy?
Yeah, and the story I've heard is this is and the hubbub and what people think online is this is to stop themselves from basically losing everything because of sexual harassment lawsuits.
That's what I saw in the article, but I don't know. I think that's. I mean, can they really file for bankruptcy? I mean,
why not? Chapter 4, isn't Chapter 14? Don't all like PG&E do it to stop themselves? True. My other question was this because. A lot of the people were upset they're letting girls in. And I don't think it was a sexist thing. I thought it was the fact that a lot of people saying, hey, make a female version of that's a copy of the Boy Scouts. We need boy spaces. That was also the one thing I was wondering if this was, you know, this was partially because they couldn't have won the lawsuits because people withdrawing from the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
I've heard a couple of people complain, but I don't know anybody who have kids in Boy Scouts to actually know if it's a big deal or not. I have no idea. So that's just conjecture.
We have a friend that has two of her kids in Boy Scouts.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not going to use your name on this.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's got them both in there. And I don't know, they seem to like it. So I'm sure it's going to affect a lot of the kids. This is like, how many members? I think it was like a crazy amount of members, like 800,000? Or no, nearly 8,000. Oh, yes, it is 2.2 million youth members and 800,000 volunteers and 8,000 leaders have been accused of sexual abuse.
Wow.
A tenth of their volunteers. That's wow. a crazy number. Just let that sink in. So 8,000.
So if that's, hold on. So if that's...
That's a tenth of their volunteers.
I'm trying to find a calculator. My phone's having issues. So 8,000, so it's 8,000 times 0.010. No, that's not right. It can't be 80 people. I did that wrong.
80% is what you think. So yeah, it's not 80%.
Yeah, so it's...
It's a tenth of their...
Yeah, so it's like 80... No. So no, it's like 100 people?
What are you doing?
Here, the math. Like, what if out? How? What's the percentage of the volunteers that they're actually?
Oh,
I sound stupid, but right now I'm really tired, so my brain's not working. Okay, you think I could do the math? If it's 1,000 people, what? So it's 100 people. If it's 10% of their total volunteer force,
64% ish.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not surprised, though. I mean, part of my question is...
Math wrong, whatever.
I mean, well, part of my question is, how well do they vet these people? You know, and by the way, not everybody who...
Well, I think quite a bit of their volunteer... Well, no, because you have to be a Boy Scout to be a Boy Scout leader.
Do you?
I believe so.
The other question is, what's the definition of sexual harassment here? Is it fondling? Is it flirting? Is it being inappropriate?
I don't know, but I mean... That's a crazy amount of numbers, 8,000.
And by inappropriate, I'm reading meaning anything from making a dirty joke to, you know, touching. So I'm just trying to figure out what does it actually mean? Because sexual harassment, at least in my opinion, has a fairly broad...
Oh, it does.
A meaning.
Yeah, thank you, Bill Clinton.
Insert funny clip here of Bill Clinton saying, "I did not have sexual relationships with that woman." I know, that's just crazy. I cannot believe it was that many people.
Yeah, that's an insane amount of people.
And I actually don't blame them from doing, I don't know. I mean, one thing, cause I do think the Boy Scouts actually does a good thing. So I don't blame them for doing the chapter 11 or 14 or whatever it's called. But on the other hand, don't these people deserve a little comeuppance for what they went through, especially if it was like sexual harassment, like you know, like touching, etc., like something that could cause somebody permanent damage? I actually don't blame them for wanting a couple of bucks. So, I mean, I don't really know. I don't know how I feel, you know?
Hmm.
I mean, what do you think?
I think all this stuff needs to stop if that means the Boy Scouts file bankruptcy and disappears. Okay. You know, I mean, there's a lot of good and bad that go along with it, but all in all, I have no interest in Boy Scouts.
It's never been, I mean, I think at one point my parents tried to get me in, but Boy Scouts had no interest in me, which I think is hilarious. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there'll always be room in places that take up the slack if that's something that's needed. Because yeah. I do think that type of thing is needed, but yeah, I mean, if it goes away because of
all this,
somebody not doing their job, I do think it's a big loss. I think it's, you know, lesson has to be learned.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, there's a lot of good that goes along with it, but all in all, I just think I think that. Granted, other than doing what you suggested, which is vetting all of their volunteers, which is 800,000 people to vet, I think that they should either. I think they have to have a better screening process if they have to go bankrupt to get this put into practice. Sure, but I think at this point, the harm has been done.
Well, that's what I meant. I mean, it'd have to be at the initial process of people volunteering. Doing it now would almost be a waste of time because it would take years to vet that many people versus, you know, do whatever Uber does to make safe Uber drivers. Why can't you do that with Boy Scouts? Now, I don't know what's required, but from what it seems like I remember as a kid, it seemed like anybody could do it.
Yeah.
You know,
but obviously not anybody should be doing it.
Oh, well, yeah. Just like, you know, a Catholic, you know, Catholic priest, all because you can become a Catholic priest does not mean you need to become one.
Yeah, I agree.
The other question, you know, since I brought up the Catholic Church, were they protecting them? You know, like the Catholic Church would move people around to different areas and different countries.
I think there was some protection going on.
And that's the part that, if they
so
were...
So there's some corruption there.
Yeah, and that's the part that if they were actually doing it, then I am 100% for dismembering it. Because you can't do that. I don't care what it is. If there were if there were 10% people doing it and they got caught, okay, cool. Or didn't get caught, I understand. But if the leaders are going, well, Bob is a really good guy, minus the fact he touched a couple of kids, let's move him over there. It's like, come on.
Yeah. I really don't think that a decent guy should ever do any of that. And if they do, then obviously they're not a decent person.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, that would be, you know, people, you can easily justify, hey, this guy's a good guy, but, you know, because you need whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that, I really think that it's, at this point, it's basically you got to start over from scratch. Because, I mean, I want to know how many kids have claimed to, but... I don't know, because you don't want just like you said, like what constitutes this. I mean, I don't want something that is not concrete, but I want to know how many concrete accusations have come about on this. You know, if it's just, I mean, 8,000 volunteers have been accused. Now, I'm sure that of those 8,000, quite probably all 8,000 have been accused of multiple instances,
So I got this wrong. So how many people do they have employed? 2 point something
million? No, 2.2 million kids, Boy Scouts, and then 800,000 volunteers. So that's what I'm saying. The volunteers, I believe, have to be Boy Scouts already or Eagle Scouts, to be running the troop.
10% of the 8,000 volunteers have been...
No, 800,000 volunteers. Yeah, 10%. No, 10% of that would be 80,000. So it's like...
No, so how many... did it say how many volunteers have been accused?
8,000.
So, okay. Okay, so it's 8,000. Okay, because I thought there were 8,000 volunteers, and yeah, okay, so I got that wrong.
No. 800,000 volunteers, and then you have 8,000 that have been accused, according to this article.
God dang, that's a lot of...
So, of those 8,000...
That's even more than I thought.
Of those 8,000, I'm sure that many of them have had multiple accusations. So that's why I'm like, at that point, that's astronomical numbers to really think about.
If there's 8,000 people, yeah, that have been accused, like I said, you'd have to break it down and what the actual definition here is being used. Because if it's all child touching or...
fondling, whatever...
Flirting, fondling. I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time even saying it. Then yeah, dude, fucking. The other question is, like we said, is how many were protected? How many went unnoticed? There's a lot of ifs here.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions that come off of this.
But I would say at the top of my hat, I'd say they need to stop, suspend everything, and they need to basically...
clean house.
Yeah. Do an FBI background check. They do something. Because if you have 8,000 volunteers that have been accused, now my assumption is, you know, there's a certain percentage of people who have, you know, that didn't do it, that are actually innocent. Because, here's my thought.
There's a certain amount, but...
It's when the error of margin, but there could be 10%. Or 5% or 2% that were falsely accused, but that still leaves, like, say if it's 2%, that's still 98% that have been likely did something.
Yeah.
It's just fucking balls nuts, man.
Now, what I'm curious about is this 8,000 number. Is this from the beginning of the Boy Scouts of America that they're counting these 8,000? Or is that within the most recent years?
Oh, dude, that's fucked. I never thought about that. The other question is, does it happen? So if it happens to Boy Scouts, it's got to happen to the Girl Scouts.
Oh, I guarantee it's happening to
the
Girl Scouts.
So I guess the other question is how many Girl Scouts, you know, because fuck, dude. I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know what to say about that because you always want to hope these people who are teaching your kids skills, whether you're Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, that they're teaching them good skills. Instead, you know, there's potentially be millions of kids out there that were potentially raped or sexually harassed because some creepy got their jollies off of it, man. Holy shit.
Okay, so back in 1910, the movement of the Boy Scouts started to take off. And then in 1912, the Girl Scouts is founded. And yeah, that's a long time. Over 100 years.
Yeah.
On both of them. Now, that's why I'm saying, like, now, I mean, do this 8,000 number start then?
It has to be.
Or has to have been in the past 30 years?
I would say it has to be within the past 30 years. Because, for one, I doubt they kept records when it first started. It has to be, let's say, with the last 30. Yeah, I'd say last 30 years. It could even be the last 20. Because I don't see it being within the 100 years of it being around. But if the 100 years, I bet that number's an order of magnitude bigger.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh, no. Well, I see. Wow. Wow. Okay. So, just on a, oh, here we go. I think this actually might cover it. So, wow. That's what I'm just trying to figure out. When all this stuff really started, I'm finding stuff way back in 1956.
Like, has been reported or rumored?
So I'll just read this right out. Anthony Monroe, a former scout leader, was sentenced to 10 years and 9 months jail for abusing two boys between 1965 and 1983.
When was the trial?
No, I don't know. And then there's another one that was sentenced to 10 years for sexual abuse. The offenses occurred in 1991, 92, 93. Man, that's just a mess.
Wow.
I mean, I've known about it. I never really looked into it, but when I saw the article that they're doing, that they're basically, oh my God, is this actually, this was last year. Oh, man. So that was 3,000. Oh, my gosh. So last year it was 7,800 leaders. Just think about that, John. 7,800. Now it's up to over probably 8,000. This is just. But as we know, I mean, a lot of these people that are sexual offenders look for certain things like this.
Well, yeah.
You know, especially, they look for places of power where they can take a subordinate, somebody under them, and abuse them.
And a child at a camp, for example, is a perfect.
Yeah, that's a perfect zone for that. And then you look at the Catholic Church, same thing with the Catholic Church. I mean, people in power and they have subordinates and below them that they just take advantage of.
Yeah.
You know, they tell them certain things and over again. And somehow, you know, at some point it becomes their truth. But yeah, I mean, I didn't know the number was 8,000. That's insane.
Yeah. That's
astronomical. Because you know that if the person is charged, each one of those people could have 5 to 10 people, some cases probably way over that, of that they've, you know, abused, manipulated.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
And how many people, because I don't know if this is true, but I did hear something that some of these people who end up being raped end up becoming rapists themselves.
Yeah, there are some that are like that.
So my other question is, should these people, if there's certified proof that the person helped cause that, should they be tried for that too?
I think so. But don't know. Would I think you could do stackable charges of something like accessory after the fact type thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see.
You know, not necessarily charge him with the full amount of the crime, his crimes, and then just throw in these as a added, you know, added sentence to them, you know?
Yeah. Just damn.
Yeah, that's insane.
I didn't know it was... As everybody hears my ringtone. Ryan, are you there? Hold on. The joys of modern technology. My cell phone doesn't automatically transfer over to Bluetooth. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay, so we were just talking about this. I'm going to actually just pull it up and tell you about it, or, you know, just right now so you can just basically pick up. So Boy Scouts of America have declared bankruptcy. And
who has?
Boy Scouts of America.
Oh.
Now, there are people saying that this is an admission of guilt on their behalf because there's no way they can handle the court fees that, you know, hiring lawyer, et cetera, with over 8,000. Yes, that's right. 8,000 Boy Scout leaders have been accused of sexual abuse.
Man, that's good. Take a long time to parse through. Holy shit.
Yeah. And this is...
That's pretty damning, though.
Yeah, and then there's... So what I was telling John is that the numbers that I found online that just... I mean, they're, you know, most of them are guesstimates, but the 2.2 million Boy Scout members, over 800,000 volunteers... And of that 800,000 volunteers, 8,000 have been accused. That's just astronomical numbers.
Ryan, are you there?
I don't know.
Ryan, are you there?
Yeah,
sorry.
Anyways, so what are you saying? I just kind of talked over you, apparently. I didn't know that you weren't.
No. I didn't know what you were saying the whole time. I don't think so. So 8,000 people.
8,000.
I was saying that was a lot to parse through.
8,000 people out of 800,000 volunteers. 8,000 of them have been accused of sexual abuse, and there's 2.2 million Boy Scout members.
There's 800,000 volunteers.
That's what is posted online as far as the numbers go.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot more than I thought.
Yeah, me too. But I mean, what I was telling John is the thing that I really want to know is how many of those 8,000 sexual abuse, I don't know what, I guess pending charges on them. Yeah. Allegations. I mean, you think about that and then you can really let it sink in that these aren't people that have just been accused by one person. There's probably a lot that have been accused of multiple times. And then really think sure. of like how many of those kids, I mean, aren't calling them out and saying this is the person that did certain things to me.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Just we're talking astronomical numbers of sexual abuse.
Very astronomical.
That just boggles my mind.
Hold on, I've just found, sorry, number I was looking for.
But, I mean, isn't that just insane?
Yeah, no, that's pretty crazy. I mean, you know, even if, you know, your skeptical panda starts fucking screaming over, you know, the raw numbers and you want to kind of play devil's advocate, okay, some of these are probably unfounded.
Oh, yeah.
And yada, 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 these things sometimes get blown out of proportion or taken in wrong context, et cetera, et cetera. Take away a percentage. Take away whatever fucking percentage you want.
And it's still insane.
Whatever number you're left with is still fucking insane.
So exactly.
You know, the same thing with the Catholic Church and their sort of, you know, policy of quiet agreement, if you will.
So,
because that's the way I look at it is agreement. You're agreeing with child rape.
So I was actually looking that up. So according to, this is Wikipedia, so I can't guarantee it's correct, but... According to a 2004 research study by John Jay College of Criminal Justice for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, 4,392 Catholic priests and deacons in active ministry between 1950 and 2002 have been plausibly neither withdrawn nor disproven accused of underage sexual abuse by 10,667 individuals. Estimate the number of priests and deacons active in the same period of time at 110,000 people. The report concluded approximately 4% have faced these allegations. The report
4%?
4%. The report 4%. Concluded by 4% have faced these allegations. The report noted that it's impossible to determine from our survey what percentage of actual cases of abuse occurred between 1950 and 2002. So basically, the reason I brought that up is just saying that apparently the Boy Scouts are able to track somehow better, or it was between the last 30 years that there's that number of
abuse cases. Yeah, that's what I was also bringing up to John. I mean, are these numbers, this 8,000, over start from their founding or past 30 years, past 20 years? And what I did find is that the Boy Scouts of America was founded in 1910 is when the organization started. So, I mean, over 100 years is this 8,000 number counting that, which I highly doubt. Now, granted, we can be all hippy dippy bullshit or whatever and say, oh, it was a different time. Bullshit. I guarantee there were freaking some types of pedophiles in the first 10 years of the Boy Scouts founding. Now,
I was going to say, yeah, I in my mind, I jumped to like, okay, it probably didn't get corrupted until a certain part. But I mean, you know, there's a giant, you know, pedophile flag that goes up with organizations like this.
Whoa.
You know, where you know, you're probably, if you're some kind of a underage predator, are looking out for these sorts of things. So, you know, so, you know, you hear this organization starting and you're thinking, oh, great, you know, this. So it probably didn't take long for that sort of corruption to start.
So this, excuse me. So, sorry, this blew me out of the water. The majority of accused priests in the United States, this is U.S. only, 55.7% had one formal legal allegation of abuse made against them. 26.4% had two or three allegations. 17.8% had 4 to 9 allegations.
Gosh.
And 3.5% of them had 10 or more allegations.
Jesus.
10.
Yeah.
And that's, fuck, dude, that's still 3.5%.
Yeah.
It's not a tiny number.
And no, just, it's not.
Just while we're comparing the numbers between, you know, the church and Boy Scouts, I'd like to point out that you're probably much more likely to dime out your Boy Scout fucking leader than your pastor or your priest.
Yeah.
You know, or bishop or things of that nature. You know, so again, these numbers are going to be much higher than the reported, you know, sort of things going on.
Yeah, but I mean, numbers, the sheer numbers of this is a mess.
It's
straight mess.
That shit like this has to actually, you know, go down, that the collateral damage is it's obviously necessary and do whatever you need to do. But it is a good organization as far as, like, when it's done correctly, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, what they do as far as, you know, like any martial art or any sort of discipline. But I don't know, to me, it just speaks to, you have to choose your kids' mentors a little bit more fucking carefully, you know, as opposed to just relying on some organization to vet these things out. You know, who spends time around your kids and why it should be a pretty up there important issue.
So compared to the United States, I tried to find the number of rapists or rapes in the United States. And what came up is for 2012. Sexual offense victims in 2012, 67,345 were female, 12,100 were male. Convicted sex offenders in 2012, 4,394 were female, 70,930 were male.
Wow.
So, I mean, just to I mean, it's just crazy, just like the matter of numbers. So that probably equals the amount of, I wouldn't be surprised if those 8,000 victims kind of equals out, you know, like batting 1,000 to how many, you know, comparative to the United States. Like if you compared the consent, the percentage rates, I wonder how much that would compare. You know, if there's if there's 2.5 million people, would that percentage actually work with the percentage of how many people are raped as a total of the United States? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the ratio or something. I'm just curious. Morbid as it is.
Yeah.
And the relationship with the victims, let's see, 26% were current or former partners, 7% was a relative. God, if one of my relatives touched my kid like that, they would be peeling him off, or actually they'd be wiping him off the floor with a broom. Friend or acquaintance, 38%, 26% is a stranger. Fuck me.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's weak, man.
We need
glass half full. At least we can, you know, be glad we're not in the slave trade days, or I don't know, any other time before now. You know, it was only worse before. It's still fucked up, but on the trend upwards, at least, I suppose.
But if we really look at it, I mean, we really couldn't keep these numbers and be able to keep track of it like we can now 50 years ago.
Well, part of it is also the stigma, too.
I mean, how much of that do you think helps, you know, as far as prevention? I mean, we know that people are going to commit crimes regardless of whether there's a law or not.
Exactly.
Or how severe the punishment might be. We can get into that all day. But how much do you think just knowing those numbers and knowing people are more likely to come out and say, like, hey, yeah, by the way, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, something happened that I've kept to myself, sort of thing. Just knowing that, how much of that do you think is preventative? You know,
I guarantee
people know that that's the case. Like, oh fuck, this is something I'm going to get, you know, dimed out for or whatever.
I guarantee knowing, you know, having those numbers out helps. I mean, it's just like you always hear there's the old thing you hear that men can't be raped, you know, and when you hear men getting raped, more people come out. When a woman hears, hey, I've been raped, like me too. Yeah. When that Me Too movement came out, there were a ton of people who came out that said, hey, this is what happened to me. This is what happened to me. So it's probably a snowball effect. Once it comes out, more people are.
Well, that's really what happened initially with the Catholic Church, because I'm pretty sure that the Catholic Church had these allegations become more publicized before the Boy Scouts. So, I mean, we can throw whatever we want at it. But, I mean, as Ryan said, these guys that are doing this are going to do it regardless of whether there's a law or anything, or even if it's, like, taboo, like child pornography or, you know, molestation.
Or whether the sentence is 10 days or 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't make a difference.
Yeah. So, but that's what we saw with the Catholic Church is, I don't know who first made the big public allegation against the Catholic Church, but then there was more people that were kind of like, you know, I'm not going to hold this in anymore. This happened. And just like you said, it was a snowball effect that kind of came out. So even with the Boy Scouts,
well,
I mean,
solidarity, yeah. You know, I mean, once you know that somebody can run that sub 440, you know, it's like, oh, it's possible. I can do this too. And
yeah,
you know, I mean, there's a lot to be said for somebody having a shared experience who comes out and says some shit like that, where you're like, hey, okay, the world didn't end for this person. You know?
Yeah,
and the other crazy thing, as I was thinking about this earlier, was how much people had to put up with. And if you look at like the Mad Men era, how much women had to put up with. Because I've heard from older ladies that they would literally, you know, that guys grabbing their ass, etc., was, you know, not uncommon. So women would be like, "Hey, stay away from Bob. He's a little aggressive."
Yeah.
You know, so I was going to say the benefit of today's society, not only is that a little bit more taboo, but it's also kept track of, which it wouldn't have been years ago, because it was just, I don't think between it not coming out and I don't think having enough technology where you could actually accumulate these numbers as easily.
Yeah. I mean, there were certain things that got around back and forth, but I mean, as far as like rape, molestation, child abuse, all that stuff. Yeah, it really didn't become such a big problem until we were able to share data and interchange between states, countries, things like that easier. Yep. And now we have this whole thing. I mean, I did find out through my scrolling that this is also counting Boy Scouts all over the world, not just U.S., but this is worldwide Boy Scouts.
So 8,000 people worldwide.
Out of 800,000 volunteers. Doesn't matter. Those still numbers are astronomical.
Oh, no, no. It's still, yeah. I'm actually surprised it's not higher. If there's 800,000 volunteers and only...
That's what I was saying. It is a good organization. You know what I mean? There's a lot of good people who actually want to be a good mentor to the next generation.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot, obviously a lot more people that are good than complete fucking psychopaths.
And my other question, when I first saw the headline, when I didn't read it, and I said this earlier, when I didn't actually read the article, I was wondering if this had to do anything where they were going to let girls into it. Because I knew a number of people that were really kind of pissed that this wasn't that the Girl Scouts didn't change their curriculum or whatever they do to copy the Boy Scouts. So you had a boy inclusive environment and a female inclusive environment, you know? And so I was wondering, did that have anything to do with the bankruptcy until I get an article and it was all about the fact that these people just couldn't keep their hands off of the other people.
Yeah.
So this was a shock to me because
Adam Carolla, the guy that took over for Howard Stern down here for the morning radios used to have a joke about when you're choosing somebody to go take the kids for the camping trip for Boy Scouts, you know, you call out for volunteers and the first guy that just immediately goes down to look at his phone, that's the guy you pick. You know, the guy who's like, oh no, please don't pick me. Like, no, Jim, that's why you're going.
Yeah, no,
I don't want to go. Yeah. You know, the guy whose hand immediately shoots up, that's a fucking red flag.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically the guy who had his phone down was voluntold.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
I agree with it, but damn. I mean, it's, I don't know.
John would be volunteered for everything.
Because I don't volunteer for shit.
Yeah. But you would be the one that would
be
picked on all the time.
I have a non-joining policy. You know, it's like Groucho Marx said, I wouldn't want to be a member of a club that would have me as a member.
Yeah.
Well, I had an acquaintance. I used to piss off an acquaintance of mine because he would always say, so you're going to do this, right? I said, possibly. Well, we really need your help on Saturday. I might be there. He would get really mad at me with the fact that I would never promise to be there. And he said, you don't promise anything. You don't plan on doing it. I said, you're finally learning. Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way too. It's like, yep, you're not going to get any definitives right now.
It's just like, and especially now, I mean, my life is so crazy. My life is busier now than it's ever been. And it's just like everyday shit. Like people at work today were talking about how crazy their lives were when they were younger, of all the crazy shit they did. And it's like, man, out of everybody I know, I'm the dullest of the group. You know, because I don't have any crazy stories of my youth. Whereas I guarantee if you talk to two of the three people here, they have some pretty entertaining stories.
Yeah, we've got some interesting times in our lives.
I don't know. It's just,
there's some benefits of a misspent youth.
There is. I mean, because nobody believes me when I say, yeah, I'm dull. I mean, I can talk about a lot of shit, but unless you're a geek, you're going to find most of it kind of not entertaining.
You know, I still look at it this way, though. I mean, there's people my age, late 30s, that want to go out and party still. And they're like, oh, we're going to go drinking over at the lake and have a big, you know, bonfire and all this crap. And I'm like, no. Not interested.
Yeah.
Because you know why? I did that shit a lot every freaking day of the week when I was a teenager.
But you know
what? So to go and do it now, it's like, no. No. I've been there, done that long before you even thought of it.
Do you know, it's funny. Like, I've never been one of these guys. Like, I love bonfires and all that, but the idea of drinking one, just never, nothing good happens with alcohol and bonfires.
Hey, I used to do bonfire walking.
Matter of fact, bonfires and settling don't mix either. But, you know, I'd rather be at home with my old-fashioned and listen to a jazz album to me, or hanging out with a good friend, or my wife and kids. That seems to be, to me, more relaxing and more entertaining than a bonfire. Matter of fact, even when I was fucking 20, I said the same thing. Dude, give me a beer and I'll be at home and I'll be fucking happy. Why? Because I'm not in the middle of somewhere and have to figure out how the hell do I get home, because everybody's too fucking hammered. And I don't particularly want to sleep in the middle of nowhere without a sleeping bag.
Well, if
I'm beyond my sleeping on a rock days.
Oh, if you go and do it properly, you don't sleep. You pass out.
Yeah, see,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm not that guy. I was the person that if I did drink, and I almost never did, that's like, okay, I'd have one or two and I'm good. There's everybody else trying to finish a bottle of Jägermeister. And then you ask them now, hey, do you like Jäger? It's like, no, dude, that one time killed it for me.
Hey, I mean, I don't think there's any alcohol other than Steel Reserve, Nasty Ice, and a Wild Turkey. Because just the taste of those things in my mouth, just gross. I mean, I got shit-faced off of them.
So I looked up.
Not interested.
I looked up. So I found a bottle of Wild Turkey 101. I was really curious what somebody said about it. And the comment was, it's not great, but it's not bad. It's like, that is the greatest review of that. It's not the best, but it's drinkable.
Oh, when I was a teenager, I would drink any goddamn thing. And that is why
turpentine.
I know for a fact you never pick up beer from a 99-cent store. That is literally why you don't do that, is because you learn the hard way that's just a bad idea.
So a little bit on, I guess you guys think I'm an alcoholic. I had the weirdest old fashioned. I had an old fashioned that had sweet vermouth in it.
There's sweet vermouth.
They added vermouth into an old fashioned, which is really close to a Manhattan. Because old fashions are made with bourbon or rye, Angostura bitters, and sugar. So basically they did that, but with sweet vermouth.
That's interesting.
It wasn't bad, but it just kind of like...
It wasn't bad.
Well, no, because...
But it wasn't good.
Oh, no, because I was expecting an old fashioned. Then I would start drinking. It's like, why is there vermouth in here? I asked for an old fashioned. It just kind of blew me out of the water. It's like, you know, it's like you're expecting one thing and you get it. You're like, it's odd.
Yeah, that would be an odd taste if I was expecting a regular old fashioned.
So, yeah, I agree. No.
Like, that's not simple syrup. What the hell is going on here?
Yeah, it's like, and I was thinking about this. I think I'm gonna try making honey syrup.
That's not hard.
Yeah, because I was thinking about doing that and making... This is where it becomes... They make sound like the alcoholic...
Isn't it kind of already syrup?
Well, there's a couple...
It kind of is, but the honey has a totally different flavor, though. It's more of a earthy-ish flavor. I kind of see it as a dark undertones of flavor.
What do you mean of...
There's a couple of different ways. So simple syrup is basically a basic simple syrup is 1-to-1 of like a cup sugar of water and a cup of water and a couple of sugar, and you mix it until it all dissolves. Some people let it, you just don't let it boil. And
he's
so
wearing an Eggers suit.
And then so with a sugar syrup, basically it's the same thing, but would you just with honey. And so what it does is it basically makes it able so you can fucking stir it.
Well, that's why I also, okay. I mean, that's the base of all mead is just honey and sugar, or honey and water,
Okay, so it's kind of just diluting it before you ferment it into a drinkable liquid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really it.
Okay.
Yeah, you just add, but the honey, making a honey syrup, you add less water than you would with a simple syrup. Because basically, like you said, you're thinning it out. Now, I like to increase the heat on it to just kind of get it all to mix in. So it basically is that simple syrup with a little bit less water.
And the other simple syrup that I really dig is a Demerara simple syrup, because it adds a little bit of molasses-y texture to it, and it brings out a little bit more flavor. And this is the part where I actually enjoy alcohol, is like crazy flavors you can bring out of stuff. So I've been wanting to try it. It's one of the things I want to try. Plus the fact, like, there's some stuff you can make, like syrups with fruit and other stuff that goes bad like a week. Honey syrup, apparently, I've been reading. I don't think, well, I have been trying to find it. I don't think it will go bad as fast.
I don't know. Well, possibly not.
Because like a regular, according to what I've been reading, a regular simple syrup, you know, can last up to 6 months, which is about what, you know, which I finish mine off at.
I wouldn't have even considered an expiration date. I'd have pulled that shit out of the fucking cabinet like a year later and been like, yeah, it's still good, right?
Honestly, I was the same way until I read today, and then I read a while ago. It's like, hey, just check the bottom of the bottle for shit. And I was like, okay.
Uh-huh. And I mean, I was under the impression that you can like cook chicken and then just keep it in a fridge forever.
Well, here's the weirdest thing though. But this is homemade. I'm
only part cooked the chicken. Make sure the middle's not all the way cooked.
Are you being serious or joking?
What do you think?
You're joking.
All right.
No, here's
like here's, really, John?
Here's,
really?
Here's the weird thing. Like, if you make your own simple syrup, it has a shelf life. But if you buy the shit from the store, it'll last forever because of the preservatives.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things I decided when I started making my own cocktails that I want to make as much as I can from scratch, because not only do I get to know what's in it, I also can adjust it per what I want. Like if this honey syrup, if I wanted to add some like star anise, if I wanted to add some cinnamon and bring out a different flavor, I can actually do that.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted to do it, because otherwise it's not fun. Because it's the steps involved. It's the process I love.
Yeah.
I don't care about the fucking alcohol.
I mean, Ryan could have said that last week about, you know, there's a lot of processes that you go through that are fun.
Yeah.
I mean, simple steps that get you wherever you want. Yeah.
I also didn't realize that vermouth is basically a fortified wine. And one of the reasons, if you've ever had a Manhattan or anything with vermouth that tastes like shit, it's because it goes south fairly fast.
Yeah, it turns into vinegar.
It doesn't age like wine.
No.
I didn't know that. I just assumed, hey, like hard alcohol, it lasts forever because whiskey doesn't go bad. I also found, according to a show I watched, there's something you can buy that you put the cork on a little bit, and it looks like those cans, like you're blowing off your computer.
Oh yeah,
and it replaces the oxygen in the bottle. So you put the cork towards it on it, put the straw in, and you hit the button and blow it for a little bit, then put the cap on, and it removes all the oxygen out of the bottle. It replaces it with a heavier air.
Oh yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I've got a couple of those.
Really? Do they work?
Yeah, they're pretty handy.
What do you use them for?
Well, if I have like a bottle of wine or something like that, I'm trying to save, because I don't drink that much, you know. So if I get a bottle of wine and me and my girlfriend drink different kinds of wine, she's definitely on the sweet side and I am not. I'll have a couple of glasses, like, I don't know, with dinner one night, and then have to like work the next morning and don't want to polish off a bottle. So yeah, no, I'll plug that shit right back up, you know, with that thing. It's pretty handy.
So do you do that? So when's the next time you would touch that, say that bottle of wine, like a couple of weeks or months?
More like a month or so before I've gotten back to some of them. And they're, you know, look, I'm not the biggest wine connoisseur, and I'm sure people would chastise me for even daring to go near that bottle after a certain period of time. And that thing is just a gimmick or what the fuck. But it doesn't taste poor, sour, or any of those things, or like it's a dead wine. Tastes like wine, you know. Obviously, it's not carbonated, you know, so it doesn't have that flat sort of taste to it.
Yeah.
Huh. I see. That's interesting. So I didn't know anything such existed. I mean, I don't really. I've never gotten into wines because, A, it doesn't excite me just opening a bottle like making a cocktail does. Because if that was the case, you know, it's like, okay, beer is cheaper.
Yeah.
So,
you know what? I got into wine because an ex-girlfriend of mine came over one day. We were just kind of hanging out, catching up. Like, let's get some wine. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I just feel like sitting here chatting, so whatever, let's get wine. I don't really like wine, but, you know, wanted to hang out with her. So we ended up getting a bottle, and just the two of us, you know, and it, this was a little bit past my heavy drinking day, so I didn't exactly have a tolerance. But just me and her sat there and drank the bottle, you know, four glasses, so two apiece. And I was not really feeling much at all. And I get up to go to the bathroom, and I'd been sitting down the whole time, and I like stumbled. I was like, oh,
there it is.
All of a sudden it hit me at once. I'm like, hey, there it is. Hey, this is kind of nice. Hey, I get it. And ever since then, I've been a fan.
Yeah. You know, I've gone wine tasting a little bit. I've just never found a bottle that I liked. Maybe I'm more like your girlfriend and like sweeter things, but because I know I like sweeter cocktails. According to some friends of our of ours, I like chick drinks, which I'm actually okay with.
Would you like tasty things? How fucking dare you, John?
Well, no, this is why I think it was funny, because this chick who's really cool was like, yeah, I'd rather just sit with a glass of whiskey, you know, and I just made me laugh. It's like, here's a woman who's saying she'd rather have whiskey, and here's me with loving my chick drink. And I died laughing just because I thought it was hilarious, the dichotomy of it.
Yeah, I'm over here with you, man. Like, you better put some sugar in that fucking whiskey.
I've known these guys before, and I've talked to them before, like they're drinking their beer and their girlfriends are drinking Mahama Mamas, and their girlfriend gets wasted like three drinks in because the amount of fucking alcohol in that. And they're like, oh, my girl just doesn't have any tolerance. And I'm like, really? Read how much percentage of the bottles of that is, and go look on the menu over there how much actual alcohol is in that.
Yeah.
She has a higher tolerance than you because she drank fucking four of them.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Like, that's the thing. Like, everybody's like, oh, you know, hang out, drink a beer. And I'm like, if I'm going to drink alcohol, I'm going to drink it with a purpose in mind.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, like, I'm not there just to drink a beer until I have to piss and then go piss and then come back and drink more beer to replace and then go piss again. No. Give me something that's going to get me fucked up and I really don't have to go take a piss every few minutes.
I drink, right. I limit my alcohol consumption. Generally, I'll have on Saturday, usually it's Friday and Saturday, I'll have like a Manhattan or whatever I've been playing with at the moment. And that's really it. Like I get it to relax. I mean, there's a couple of times like, man, I could really wish I wanted to use to drink a couple of more. And it's just like, you know what? I cut myself off because not only can I not afford my tastes, which by the way, out there, if you're listening, if you really, truly want to stop yourself becoming an alcoholic or, say, smoking cigars all the time, smoke a lot of good ones, then it'll fuck your palate up for anything cheaper. Because I still can't have Swisher Sweets because they're fucking nasty.
Yeah, those are pretty nasty.
Like,
but,
you know, like, I love my favorite cigar, right?
People actually smoke those and not just roll weed in them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because my favorite cigar right now is rolling between $35 to $40 for one.
Yeah, I actually used to know quite a few people that would buy the Swisher Sweets and they would actually smoke them instead of just stuffing out, you know, weed in it. And I tried them a couple times. They're pretty shitty.
They're disgusting. And I don't know if anybody else ever smoked. I mean, I smoke cigars occasionally. It's been probably almost a year since I've had one. You can tell the difference pretty well off between a Swisher Sweets and some quality. And it's hard to compare if you've never done it, but it's like drinking Coca-Cola and then having Diet Shasta Orange.
I don't mind Shasta Orange.
That okay.
I prefer pineapple or grape, but you know,
okay, the Diet Shasta Cola that's been sitting in the vending machine since 1972. How about that?
I'd try it.
Yes, you would. I know you.
I'm like, all right, you know, I'll give that shit a try.
You're killing my metaphor here.
I know, but that's what I do.
Pedantic bastard.
But yeah, I'm like, I would honestly drink that soda.
I mean, that works for me. I actually like, I'm trying to find bigger bottles of alcohol I really like. I like Gentleman Jack, and I just found the biggest bottle of Gentleman Jack I've ever seen.
Probably pretty pricey.
It's $40. It's like $45.
Yeah, that's right. Not that bad.
Thinking, you know, I like Gentleman Jack. I mean, my favorite one so far I've had in the last couple of years is I really like Buffalo Trace. Hmm. That was pretty good. That was tasty. As far as whiskey goes.
It's all good. Yeah.
Nothing like making me sound like an alcoholic.
You do it to yourself.
I don't care. You know, I'm having fun with it. So Ryan, do you have, before we call it a day, do you have anything to bring to the table?
Yeah, I went to the gun store the other day. I was looking at 1911s, wanting to pick one up, just gonna get like a Rock Island or something.
So if you get anything else in a 45, I'm gonna harass you to the day you sell it. Just to let you know.
Okay, this is so. With that in mind, this is how much of a purist I am, and how weird this is to me. And I'm not even sure if you're aware of this. The one that they had there, you know, it was a 45. Because I don't agree that should ever be made in 9mm. A double stack magazine.
In a 45.
10 rounds. In a 1911, no less. I've never seen a double stack magazine before in a 1911.
No.
It was weird. Like, I pulled the magazine out, like the guy handed it to me, and I immediately, you know, checked the chamber at a gun store. You know, you need to do it, but hey, forced to have it. Fuck you guys.
Oh, I got a great story on
pulled
that.
Pulled the fly back, and then I dumped the magazine, and I'm like, why does this magazine feel so thick? And I turned it to the side, and I'm like, is this a double stack? They're like, yeah. I'm like, wow, I thought this grip felt a little thick. The strangest thing ever. Yeah, I don't want it anymore because of that.
I have
that is weird.
I have a Rock Island Arms that I really like. When I purchased it, there were two I was looking at. There was one, the base model, and for like $30 more, it came with basically all the things I wanted to do to it. I'll tell you offline, off air, what I got. I'm proud of you, Ryan. You know, James and I have taught you correct. So I have a great story about gun stores. So there was this gun store where we live who I'm pretty sure they just wanted to play gun store because it was really wacky. James knows which one I was in. So I talked about. So I walked in there one day because I always wanted to see what it is. And they had a couple of guns that looked interesting. So I said, hey, can I see this handgun? This lady just hands it to me. In normal protocol, what they do is they lock the slide back, release the magazine if it's actually in there, and hand it to you. This chick literally just handed it to me. And I said, do me a favor. Would you please lock the slide back and eject the magazine? And she's like, well, I don't know how to do that. It's like, and I'm like, wait, but you don't know how to? It's like, no, the owner and the other gentleman aren't here today, and it's just me, and I don't know how to. They don't really teach me anything about guns. I said, okay.
You're going to learn something now.
Yeah, and I'm like, I normally don't do this. So here's the thing. And I broke everything down. I said, this is what you do. You see this little button. And I taught her everything. So this is the protocol. Yeah. So you don't get possibly yelled at by everybody who wants to buy a gun.
Everybody who walks in there. I mean, look, at the very least, I will absolutely accept the guy checking the chamber, checking the magazine, checking the chamber, and putting it back together and then handing it to you. Almost even like the, hey, let's see what you do. Sort of thing.
No, is he checking the chamber like James?
Checking to clear, you know, make sure it's clear.
Is he looking down the barrel?
Is he looking down the barrel like an RSO James and I had one year?
That's weird. It looks clear. The weirdest story of all time.
Just can't make it up.
Most people think it's a paranoid sort of a thing. But, you know, for all the people who dislike guns, it's like, don't you like that we're that paranoid? I sent James a picture one day of me at the gas station with my, I was pumping gas, and I instinctually had my trigger finger along what would have been the slide of the gas pump nozzle. And I was like, trigger discipline, bitch.
But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the steps that John and Ryan are talking about, it's respect for the weapon you're holding.
Person that you're with, for anybody around you, it's like, hey, look, I'm going to do you the courtesy of making sure we're all safe in this room. I'm not going to sweep you with the barrel.
So basically, what I tell people is you fear guns like you fear God. There's a healthy dose of respect that's required when you enter into ownership, or you even enter picking the things up. Because what it is, you're coming from an unknown circumstance. Somebody hands you a firearm. You don't know anything about it. And so what you have to do is you assume, okay, this gun is loaded. So the first step, and okay, is it loaded? You rack the slide back. Okay, it looks empty. And if it was loaded, you'd eject the round that was in the chamber, if there was one in the chamber, and you eject the magazine. That way you know it's safe.
Yeah. But I would compare it this way. I would compare it this way. Do you hand somebody a knife by the blade or handle?
Yeah. Well, I would say this. How often are you in the habit of putting your life in somebody else's hands?
Yeah, you know, too.
Like, for example, James, I trust James with my life probably more than most people on this planet. I'd say maybe like you and another person who's tied with you.
There's a caveat to that. But, it's like, isn't a James in a mood to fuck with you?
There's many, many caveats. One of those being, if James hands me a gun, even if I watched him clear it, he's going to watch me clear it because I know he's crazy enough to fuck with me.
True.
Put some dummy rounds in there.
He'd hand me a loaded gun and be like, let's see what this asshole does.
Well, it's the same thing like when I used to deal Ryan a deck of cards and I'd stack the deck. There was multiple times I gave him like a straight flush and me a straight flush just one over.
Yeah.
Just because I was fucking with him and wanted to see his expression as he's looking at it.
It's just really weird when you go to a gun store and somebody says, I don't know how to do anything. And you're thinking,
why are you there?
Yeah. It's weird. There's only been a few times I've ever felt unsafe around firearms. And that was one of them. And I'm just like, this is uncomfortable. Why am I teaching you safety? And I've actually had people get mad at me for saying this, but I've sat in more firearm safety lectures than any law enforcement officer I know, just by the amount I've been around firearms in my life. And anything like I've taken church groups shooting, and I always have to give them the same spiel. This is the pointy end. The pointy end's where the bullet comes out. If it faces you, you're gonna get hurt.
Yeah.
My favorite one. Yeah. I know I've told this story before. I took a church group shooting, so I took one of my firearms, my handguns. Didn't do anything. Didn't like, I knew it was empty. I handed it to him and said, okay, tell me about it. Is it safe? And went down the line of a handful of people. And it's just like, okay, now I know where you guys stand. How long do you guys have? I'm not taking you shooting until I know I'm not going to get fucking killed.
Yeah, no shit.
And I mean, you guys have definitely shot more than I have, but I enjoy the like, hey, this is how is goofy as I am most of the time. Hey, this is how serious we're about to take this. I like the safety training part. You know, this is as goofy as you know I am. Here's where you're going to see me not be goofy for a few minutes.
Yeah,
I actually find it incredibly boring, mainly because I've heard it so much. But it's one of those things that you always pay attention to. You know, because there's always things, no matter how long you've heard it, there's things like, you know, you're right, that's a good point that you don't think about, or it's always a good refresher, but I've always thought they were boring just because of how many times I've heard the fucking same speech.
Yeah.
I always wish somebody would get like a gimmicked gun and accidentally shoot, you know, like shoot themselves like, get a squib and really freak people out, because I think it'd be fun. I would totally do that if I taught CCWs, just really fuck with people. Yeah, oh my God, is there a doctor in the house? And then I wouldn't be teaching CCWs again.
Yeah. Well, and you know, contrary to popular belief, it is a perishable skill. You know, even the safety portion, people get complacent, you know, and you start making stupid mistakes. You know, you don't treat it with the same reverence that you once did. And you have to keep at least that base of like, hey, you know what? I know what I'm doing. I know what we're about to do is safe because we've done it 1,000 times. However, I'm not going to skip the couple of fundamentals, you know, that are just universal precautions.
Yeah, no, and, you know, there's to quote Norm Abram, you know, the number one safety thing you can have is safety glasses and knowing where the gun is pointed.
Yeah.
But besides that, I've
seen people shoot really stupid fucking things with really big guns. And not one of them would ever not check a chamber or not know what their background is or point the gun towards anything unsafe. And then they'll shoot it, you know, fucking,
so we're,
you know, just things that explode and shrapnel and
So we're getting a little late. We're actually over, but my favorite YouTube video of all time. There's this guy shooting a Barrett Lightweight 50. Now, Barrett Lightweight 50 is a 50 caliber rifle. It shoots the 50 BMG. It's a very big fucking round. And this guy shot a plate some distance off, ricocheted off the metal plate, and hit his earmuff.
Yeah.
Yep. It is. I saw that one. It is crazy.
It is my favorite video. And if I was that guy, I'd be needing new pants.
Yeah, no shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's why you angle your steel.
Yeah. Because if he had his head tilted a little bit more to one direction, his wife would have been
his head gone.
Well, this whole head. There would have been a front and no back.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, I know somebody out there, if you're listening, whether it's, you know, whenever I post this or 6 years from now, firearms is really about being safe. If you're safe, you know where your background, what's behind you, what you're shooting, you know the people with you, you'll be fine. Guns aren't particularly dangerous. It's the people behind them that make them dangerous.
Yeah.
Hence the reason why James and I almost watched a range safety officer shoot themselves with my firearm.
Yeah.
Which is, one day I'll tell the story again because it makes me laugh, but it was the craziest fucking thing I've ever seen a range safety officer do. By the way, they take classes for this. There's an NRA class where they basically say, don't point the gun at yourself. Apparently,
that's the title of the entire lecture.
Yeah. Apparently, he fell asleep during that segment because it was just dumbstruck me. I remember looking. James and I had the same reaction on our face. We're both like, no. No. Oh, my God, he's doing it. Hold on, let's step to the left.
Yeah, let's just move back just a little bit.
And we kind of stepped at like a 30-degree angle from him, so if it ricocheted, hopefully it wouldn't be going our way.
Yeah.
Fuck, people are stupid.
Yeah. No joke.
Don't be stupid around firearms. You can be stupid You can be stupid around a lot of things. Firearms are not as forgiving as your wife is.
No shit.
So please, be careful. And ladies and gentlemen, for the California Pariah, Jonathan Charney, for James, the Fat Man Stevens, and Ryan Preston, thank you for listening.
Goodbye.